Blog Talk Radio.
Russian version of the Winter Olympics. So far, thank God, there's been no terrorism problems, but it isn't over yet. Anyway, we got this welcome rain here in California, and of course, now at the other end, we've got stormy weather in more ways than one, and of course, some people are complaining about floods and all of that, complain. But anyway, back in the 1965-66 gubernatorial election, when Pat Brown was the incumbent, that's the father of the present Jerry Brown, also governor, three-time governor, you know, like a Southern governor situation there, but anyway, because of the Watts riot and the mishandling, Pat Brown was out of the state. The lieutenant governor was a guy named Glenn Anderson, whose family originally came from Illinois. Interesting. A lot of politicians in California come from other places. We'll get to that another day. But the dominant states, I will say this, are Illinois, Texas, and New York. but anyway, Pat Brown should have come back right away and got a handle on the situation. So Ronald Reagan and Republicans used the Watts riots and the mishandling or the failure to deal with it properly as one of the issues to defeat Pat Brown in that election. Now, I remember I came out here, it was school break, and saw bumper stickers, and you can see on this blog talk the slogan, "If it's Brown, flush it down." And now here is a replay of that. And then what is interesting is that it resurfaced, this stanza resurfaced twice. During the Haight-Ashbury period in the communes, when people didn't want to spend a lot of money on utilities like water and electricity, they would cite this, if it's brown, flush it down. If it's yellow, it's mellow. Well, it's come up again, and it's very applicable to the drought situation here in California. Now, here's what it sounds like. This was sent to us, this excerpt.
Next time you go to the toilet, this is what you can do. Don't flush away your pee-pee. Just flush away your poop. If it's brown, flush it down.
Yeah, that's
next time you go to the toilet, this is what you can do. Don't flush away your pee-pee, just flush away your poop. If it's brown, flush it down.
Yep, that's part one of it. We'll play the other part Wednesday. Now there's this fuss about the State Department official in Europe, forgot her name, who was wiretapped or eavesdropped on. And this happens all the time. One of the big myths is that nations, even allies, do not spy on one another. They all do it. And because it's a case of trust but verify, and allies have betrayed allies. You don't; they didn't have to be enemies. We've seen double dealing, concealment of information, dislike of your fellow leader in another country. A perfect example of this happened in 1962 when John Kennedy, President John Kennedy, made a state visit to Canada. The prime minister at the time was a conservative, a firebrand lawyer from what they call the prairies, named John Diefenbaker, Conservative Party. And what the United States tried to do, wanted to land, oh, here we go again, I'm sorry about this, to land or not, to station missiles on, well, I'm sorry about the post. I have to have that connection to keep this block talk going. Anyway, Diefenbaker government opposed this, and their policy was Canada first. There's always been this problem. Pierre Trudeau, the one-time Liberal prime minister of Canada, used to say the relationship between Canada and the United States is like a flea or a mouse living next to an elephant. I don't think it was a mouse. It was another expression. Anyway, in the meetings with between Kennedy and Diefenbaker, when Kennedy thought that Diefenbaker was a bore, and John Kennedy made this statement offhandedly. He didn't know that was either. I think he wrote it down, and he said, "I hope never to meet this boring son of a bitch again." Well, anyway, the paper was leaked, and there was this uproar in Canada about this statement, but of course we didn't break off relations with Canada. Canada didn't break off relations with the United States. But these things happen all the time. These guys may shake hands and kiss and embrace in public, but they keep their knives sheathed, and they when they're private meetings with their aides, they let their hair down in a manner of speaking, and say what they really think. And hopefully the mics are off and no papers are left behind with notes on them. I think that's what happened. That Kennedy had written down something to another aide at that meeting, and they forgot to take the paper with them or destroy it. And so this is what happened. But it happens all the time, and people should not get all upset about it because. You know, that's what diplomats behind the scenes really think of their opposite number. Now, this has come up again. This Uber, this pseudo-taxi limo service, one of the guys who founded it, if you're talking about Canada, was from University of Calgary, a computer expert. And he worked with this, I believe this Russian-Jewish guy, Russian-Jewish heritage guy from L.A., Travis Kalanick, to start this pseudo taxi limo service that started in San Francisco, like so many bad things. And, of course, they've spread. And, of course, the taxi cab drivers and limo drivers here and even passengers and citizens are outraged because these people, like the bicyclists, do not obey the traffic laws. They don't stop at stop signs. It's been alleged that Uber has been overcharging people and engaging in deceptive business practices. And there's a lawsuit that's been filed in the 7th Federal Circuit, which is headquartered in Chicago, Illinois. In fact, I worked in that building many years ago. Anyway, the lawsuit alleges that there are safety issues. And the question is, does Uber, aren't they covered under the ADA, Americans with Disability Act, because there's no access for wheelchair people or anybody who's crippled or disabled? This is going to be real interesting. Also, among the other deceptive practices alleged is that Uber operatives call up taxicab drivers and make phony reservations. So this ties up the taxicab telephone line and reservation service. So this is going to be real interesting when this comes out. Now, talking about other frauds that go on, CNA, Continental National Insurance Company, which is headquartered in Chicago, Illinois, is believed to be under a federal investigation for also deceptive practices involving federal insurance claims. One of their claims handlers out of Southern California, this woman, Karen Dow, has bounced around from several insurance companies, got caught in a statement she made in a letter to a victim and also on a telephone call in which he claimed that his insurance company agreed with her insurance company to take less than the medical bills that were racked up. In this case, the victim's insurance company paid his medical bills to the full amount of the policy limit. And this Dow woman claimed that they made your adjuster, I'm quoting, your adjuster has agreed to accept this amount of money, which was less than what was owed to the victim's insurance company. And, of course, the victim's insurance company told him he owed the full $10,000 and they wanted it, which was legitimate. So this happened. Then they got this other guy out of Littleton, Colorado, a guy named Terry Abbott, who sends doodles to the victim. And then claims that Medicare filed a lien against his claim against CNA when, in fact, Medicare in writing said, first of all, we didn't cover any of this. The doctors that treated the victim do not take Medicare. They don't take any government insurance. They wanted the auto insurance, MedPay, which this victim had, and also the MRI and two of them, one was upright, one was horizontal, also refused to take government insurance, played this game, and, of course, you know, this is an ongoing fraud that's a new type of claims handler in, of insurance companies fraud. We usually hear about when there's insurance fraud, it's usually auto shop guys, it's ambulance chasing lawyers, chiropractors, even claimants who pull all kinds of fraud. They set up auto accidents and that sort of thing. These things go on and have gone on. But we were just beginning to look at claims handlers, so-called claims adjusters, who want to lowball a claim, either because they're a team leader or whatever, trying to look good at the end of the year, so they saved his company a lot of money. And now lowballing means that the claims handler and his team leader or manager wants to settle a claim at which they know is at far less than the actual value to thoroughly make the victim whole. So this goes on also, and it's also illegal. It's deceptive practices. So we'll be getting into more of that. Also, we talked about the video voyeurs. Now, it turns out that Shaun White, who was supposed to compete in the Olympics, is injured and has withdrawn. But it turns out that he was a victim, apparently, of a video voyeur that was put on the web by these homosexual video voyeurs who target athletes. They target people like even Arnold Schwarzenegger before he became governor, Joe Louis, Joe DiMaggio. A lot of this stuff, they think it's great fun to print and to video voyeur frontal nudity of these people, invading their privacy. And this goes on all the time. They also target high school students, grammar school students, especially in their locker rooms. And we're beginning to see more and more lesbian stuff. It's relatively new from what our investigation turns out. So this goes on, and the people who are doing this are on the government payrolls. Here in San Francisco, one guy is on the payroll of a newspaper that prints male prostitution ads. They call them escort services. So these things go on. Now, I did promise to play the Adlai Stevenson. It was his birthday last week, and I was acquainted with Adlai when I worked in Chicago in the federal building, and I think this is really important because this was something he said at the time, which is still relevant today, of the high cost of living. And this was done in 1952 when he ran. He was the Democratic nominee twice, 52 and 56. when he ran for president, and this is what he said then.
That's my daughter-in-law, Nancy, and my oldest son, Adley Jr. He's a student at law school. I think they're staying with me during the vacation. I think they live pretty well, but they're learning a lot about something that worries a lot of people in this country, and that, of course, is the high cost of living. In spite of the Eisenhower promise, the cost of living today is higher than it's ever been before in the history of our country. And this is a serious matter for young people, like my son Adley and his bride Nancy.
Well, that was in 1952. It's still happening today, and it's even worse. Now, some people, we were filling in because I lost births, deaths, and events script for today. So we're filling in with some audio stuff. A lot of people are looking at the Roman Catholic Church in the Vatican, wondering what's really going on. And, of course, a great musical satirist wrote this song, which was back in the 60s, which is when the Catholic Church was had this policy of openness. And this was John the 22nd, that little rotund pope, who started this openness of the Catholic Church, and it led to other problems. But I think this is kind of funny, and it's well worth repeating as an encore.
First you get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and do whatever steps you want. If you have cleared them with the pontiff, everybody say his own Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican right. Step into that small confessional. Every guy who's got religion will tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer. Drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8. Time to transubstantiate. Get down upon your knees. Fill with your rosary. Bow your head with great respect and
now, I guess they're doing a different type of the Vatican rag these days. Now, we hear that the, quote, the radical left talks about that 1% don't pay any taxes. This is William Randolph Hearst, the late publisher of the Examiner newspapers. They were in L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, and I think in Dallas. And here's what he said about higher taxes.
My friends, this whole system of income taxation has degenerated into a racket. The sooner this impudent, intrusive, despotic, discriminatory, and perhaps revolutionary system of taxation is repealed, the better it will be for the honesty, the industry, the wealth, and the welfare.
No, that was William Randolph Hearst. Now we get a different view from the senator, the late senator from Louisiana, Huey Long. And he says, share the wealth.
According to the tables which we have assembled, it is our estimate that 4% of the American people own 85% of the wealth of America, and that over 70% of the people of America don't own enough to pay the debts that they owe. How many men ever went to a barbecue and would let one man take off the table what's intended for 9/10 of the people to eat? The only way you'll ever be able to feed the balance of the people is to make that man come back and bring back some of that grub he ain't got no business with. you're going to feed the balance of the people. What's Morgan and Baruch and Rockefeller and Mellon going to do with all that grub? They can't eat it. They can't wear the clothes. They can't live in the house. Give them a yacht. Give them a palace. Send them to Reno and give them a new wife when they want it, if that's what they want. But when they've got everything on the God's living earth that they can eat and they can wear and they can live in, and all that their children can live in and wear and eat and all their children's children can use, then we got to call Mr. Morgan and Mr. Mellon and Mr. Rockefeller back and say, come back here. Put that stuff back on this table here that you took away from here that you don't need. Leave something else for the American people to consume. And that's the problem. We're not going to destroy the Gulf Refining Company. We're not going to destroy the Standard Oil Company. But we're going to say that the limit of any one man's stock ownership in the Standard Oil Company is from $3 to $5 million to that individual, and that the balance of the people of America own the balance of what the Standard Oil Company is worth. All right. Then, we start from the bottom, that the 25 or more million American families shall have a homestead, a home, and the comforts of a home, including an automobile and a radio, the things it takes in that house to live on. We say to America, 125 million, none shall be too big, none shall be too poor, none shall work too much, none shall be idle. No luxurious mansions empty, none walking the streets, none impoverished, none in pestilence, none in want, but in the land blessed by the smile of the Creator, with everything to be consumed, to be eaten, to be worn, that America will become a land sharing the fruits of the land, not for the favored few, not to satisfy greed, but that all may live in a land in which the Lord has provided an abundance sufficient for the luxury and convenience of the people in general. I think.
Long record.
Huey Long was later assassinated. There's a famous movie, All the King's Men, starring Broderick Crawford and Mercedes McKenzie. John Ireland, who's actually born in Canada, British Columbia. But anyway, it's a great film, and of course it was based on a book. They changed the names around, but they always do that to avoid even the semblance of a lawsuit. But it's very accurate, and of course there's been a couple of movies made since based on All the King's Men, but nothing surpasses the Broderick Crawford one. Now here, this is a way Huey Long talking about there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, and a growing number of Americans are beginning to feel that way if they don't already.
The Democratic Party and the Republican Party were just like the old patent medicine drummer that used to come around our country. He had two bottles of medicine. He'd play a banjo and he'd sell two bottles of medicine. One of those bottles of medicine was called Hypopalora. And another one of those bottles of medicine was called Lopapahara. Finally, somebody around that said, is there any difference in these medicines? Oh, he said, considerable. They're both good, but they're different. He said, that Hypopalora is made from the bark off the tree that we take from the top down. And that Lopapahara's made from the bark that we take from the root up. And the only difference that I've found between the Democratic leadership and the Republican leadership was that one of them was skinning from the ankle up and the other from the ear down when I got to Congress.
Well, he was quite a humorist, and he had some interesting comments about Share the Wealth and FDR. We'll get into that another day. We're going to end with our usual politics and poker. I'm willing to bet, even though he was a Southern politician, I'm sure he drank. I don't know if he was a Baptist, a boozer, but I'm sure he played some politics. He certainly played politics, and I bet he played poker, and we will end with our theme, politics and poker. We will be back Wednesday. We will be back with another stanza of If It's Brown, Flush It Down. If It's Yellow, It's Mellow. Also, we will be updating the insurance new types of fraud that some of these outfits are engaging in. And also, we will be bringing up who really gets affordable housing. Now, Goldman Sachs, there's a report that they are signaling there's trouble in the housing industry. This is despite the rosy projections of the newspaper mediocrities who were talking about, get in now, sell your house or before the price goes up and all that. But we are seeing more and more businesses closing. The yuppie techie thing, the only businesses that are opening, and it's a very fragile situation, these are businesses that cater to the conspicuous consumption lifestyle of these people. They lose those techie jobs. They don't have that disposable income. Even, it starts with cocaine, marijuana, the wine bars, the beer sample bars, the fancy restaurants, vacations, the lease BMWs and all of that. But, so it's all very fragile. It's what we see as a false prosperity, but we'll end with politics and poker. We'll be back Wednesday. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas, and go to our blog, Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas.net.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll stay.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 20.
23. What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, rubbing neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the
Zola. We'll be back Wednesday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Stay safe, and hope spring comes and warms up everybody. Good night.